Welcome to Always and Forever, a spoiler-free One Tree Hill podcast where we analyze and dissect the greatest teen show from the early 2000s.
This week, we are discussing all these things that I've done. That's a very short list. The seventh episode. I feel like since our intros are shorter, I have to like do a little bit of forced banter every now and then, Caitlin.
Of course.
Anyway, this is the seventh episode of season four, which was written by Adele Lim, directed by David Jackson, and originally aired on the CW on November 15th, 2006.
And according to the episode description in our OTH DVD box sets, it reads, "While others get involved in small-time crime and sleaze, Nathan hits the big time. He owes a vicious gambler $15,000 just before the state semifinals, and the gambler has serious bucks riding on the game."
Somebody told me that this is the place where everything's better and everything's safe.
Enjoying my lovely cup of dirt and water, I'm Caitlin Ilinich.
And a slutty lying liar who lies, I am Jeremy Rodriguez.
Yes.
I'm just kidding. I am not a liar. Anyway, this episode is titled after the song by The Killers, All These Things That I've Done. What did you think of this song, Caitlin?
So I know this song. Do you know this one too?
I do not.
Oh, really?
Give me some fun facts.
Yeah, it was definitely a single back in the day.
Like, I like The Killers.
2005 or
but I'm not
six?
Familiar with this one.
Maybe. Yeah, I did know this song. Hadn't heard it in a while. I looked at the lyrics. I don't know. I feel like this is becoming harder and harder.
I don't know what the way you pause, I was expecting something really profound, and then you're just like, I don't know.
I think it really is focusing on Nathan probably.
Okay.
The most out of all the characters in this episode. I don't feel like there's a strong connection to the song. While it's a good song, I like it. I think the stuff with Nathan, like, and the choices that he's made, that title, All These Things That I've Done, I think it's kind of hinting towards to, like, some kind of regret because of the choices he's made with the loan sharks.
Okay. It's funny you say that. I was tying this to Peyton.
Really?
Yeah. So the lines that really stuck out to me were, like, you know, you gotta help me out. And I feel like this is Peyton's way of reaching out in a way. And then also the line, I got soul, but I'm not a soldier. And I feel like that's, again, Peyton's way of just saying, like, hey, I'm, you know, she's thinking that she's not strong enough for this. She ends up realizing that she is strong in the end, but I feel like this, like, kind of represents, like, some of her internal monologue leading up to it. Otherwise, that's all I really have.
Yeah, I really don't have too much more to say, but I think the connection with Peyton is probably better than my connection.
Okay. Well, I mean, cool. So we both have something different, which is cool. So this is why we have to keep talking about these songs, because I'm pretty sure there will be something here and there.
Yeah, there's some good ones here and there, but I feel like the ones this season have been tough.
A little bit, yeah. But it's not like an entire album. Or a band's name.
Yeah.
But anyway, shall we get into some of the storylines happening this episode?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, so first off, we have Mouth and a model who was very obsessed with him because he's a virgin.
So, do you know that this model is... her name's Carrie D in real life, and she...
Carrie D English, yes.
She won America's Next Top Model, and I don't know if it was because of her winning it, or it was, like, in the middle of the season, where I think one of the prizes was you could star in an episode.
I did do the research into that. Thank you very much.
Like, I knew this because I was watching, like, America's Next Top Model, I was watching this season, like, I think when it, or maybe shortly after, like around the same era.
Okay. Well, as Caitlin said, yes, Carrie D. English won Cycle 7 of America's Next Top Model. It was in 2006. So she did win that entire cycle, yes. But guessing in this episode was a prize for winning a challenge during that cycle. So.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I may have watched this episode back in the day because I remember, like, they really, they did it for both One Tree Hill and then when America's Next Top Model aired before Veronica Mars, they also really leaned into this marketing by saying, like, the winner of this challenge gets a guest spot on Veronica Mars or on One Tree Hill. And that was, like, a big thing to try to get you to, like, watch it. Also, America's Next Top Model was the lead-in for these shows. So it was, like, trying to encourage people to watch the show that came afterward.
True. And I remember that those promotional, like, those commercials, like, promoting everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like the guest spot. I do remember that. So,
but yeah, Carrie D. English does a good job with the material that she's given. Not the material. The material's not good, but she does.
No, it's not. It's like
she does the best she can.
What was the whole, they literally wrote this in for the America's Next Top Model. Because what was the point of Mouth really having the interaction? I mean, I guess the point was like he had to make the choice in the end of who to go with. Gigi or the models.
Her name is, by the way, her name is credited as Tia, but her name is never actually mentioned on the show itself.
I think he was holding a hanger that said Tia, and, and Brooke might have said, go put the gem or the sparkly gems or whatever it was on Tia's. I think Brooke might have said her name, but I remember, I remember someone was holding the hanger with Tia.
Oh, okay. Good eye.
I think it's at number seven, so that's kind of funny because it's cycle seven.
Oh, really? Damn, okay.
I don't know why I paid attention to that.
That's cool. Okay, I like the little references there. That's awesome. Well, this storyline, I remember the drama queens talking about this during their season four coverage, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like this is the way of the creator inserting himself a little bit.
Yeah.
By being like, look, see, there's a woman who's after me. Because, you know, Mouth was the self-insert for him. And it's just this icky way of, I don't know.
Yep. Sounds about right.
Yeah. The girl's like, oh my god, you're so cute. Please tell me you're a virgin. Oh my god, I can eat you up. Also, Mouth says to her, I'm not used to working near a woman this hot. What woman is going to be like all over Mouth for this reason? You know, like women do not talk like this.
Like this storyline is kind of dumb. I mean, it's in a way it's kind of cute to see Mouth like just, you know, Mouth open like. What? Who am I standing in front of? Like, it is kind of funny to see that, but, like, the storyline is just so dumb to me, because it doesn't really have much of a point.
Yeah, to see him, like, falling over a girl, and he's like, oh, I'm nervous. Like, that's funny, that's cute, but to see the girl actually come to him, and then Mouth has to be all conflicted, because he's like, oh, god, I have a hot girl who's after me, but I have a date with this other girl who is really nice. What should I do? And even Skills comes in and is like, you need to pick the girl who's most beautiful on the inside. I'm just kidding, dog. You go after whoever you want to go after.
I know, right?
Not... Which I'm like, I haven't decided if I'm offended by Skills as a mentality here. I don't know.
I think... I'm sorry, Alex is like yelling in the background at the video game or something.
I thought I heard that.
I don't know if you heard that.
I did hear that. I was like, let's keep that in. Little Easter egg.
I don't even know what my train. Whoa, what was I saying?
I forgot now, too.
Crap.
Oh, yeah, Skills and, like, his eye.
I think it's kind of just, like, a typical teenage boy response. Maybe not even just teenage male response. Yeah. I don't know.
yeah, not to be like, oh, like, boys will be boys about it.
No,
but, like,
I don't want to be like that, but...
Yeah, but it seemed realistic. It's not like he's saying, like, you know, like, oh, like, you know, fuck Gigi, like, get rid of her or anything. Like, he's not, like, being disparaging toward her. I feel like he's just trying to say, like, hey, like, you know...
Live in the moment.
Right.
Honestly. But, you know... We'll get to that later, but it was nice to see, like, how it all end, how the whole storyline ended, which was cool.
Right, yeah, exactly.
That's the coda, right? We can't talk
about it. It is, yes.
Okay.
You can't talk about that, okay? Despite the fact that I broke that rule in the last episode, which I just edited earlier this weekend.
Uh-huh.
I'm not perfect either, Caitlin. Anyway.
One thing I would like to say about this whole fashion show... storyline, like, I feel like it focused more on Tia, the model's character, and Mouth, and not so much Brooke. And what was this fashion show again? She just got entered into some local thing?
Yeah.
It was, like,
the Texas
mentioned.
Art Road Tour, I think is what it's called. It's TART.
Yeah, so it was mentioned briefly in the previous episode. Mm-hmm. And I kind of, like, forgot about it, to be honest.
Yeah, she got entered in, or, like, you know, she got accepted into it or something like that. She was a last-minute addition, I believe, yes, and this is the episode where it actually happens, but yeah. But yeah, there's nothing about, like, Brooke, like, getting the opportunity or anything like that, about, like, why this was good. She just has a fashion show. Like, okay, cool.
I would have liked to see her shine a little bit more in this episode.
Yeah.
It had all to do with the icky teacher, and... I mean, this was, like, her moment. I feel like they could have shown her, like, shining. But it was just really, like, the background story. That was the setting, the fashion show. You didn't get too much more from that.
Yeah, I never really thought about that, but yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, it would have been nice to see, like, why was this a good professional development opportunity for Brooke or something like that?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because... spoiler, not a spoiler, there's not really, like, a payoff for this fashion show. It's just sort of there, just thrown in there for an episode.
Yeah, and I think it all had to do with America's Next Top Model thing, because they needed a model storyline, I guess. Why the model, like, I understand Carrie D, that the model, actual real-life model, won this, but why does she have to play a model?
Yeah.
Like, she could have played any character.
Yeah, they didn't do this for Veronica Mars. Like, the actresses who won, they didn't win and become models on the show. You know, like, this could have easily been, you know what I would have liked to have seen? Carrie D. English be another student in the school that Nick seduces.
She was younger. This actress, I think I looked her age up. I think she was 21 when she won.
Oh,
the
really?
Cycle. So she would have been younger than the other actors at this point.
So she could have played a teen,
maybe
realistically.
The same as James, but yeah. Probably.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen that, though. Like, her being a teacher and then Nick being a creep with her. Like, it would have been kind of cool to see that, like, it went bigger than...
True.
Brooke and Rachel. It went bigger than him, like, flirting with Brooke and Rachel. He actually was, like, preying on, like, other young girls in the school, you know?
Yep. No, that would have been interesting.
So, speaking of, like, you know, again, we're breaking our rules by talking about the coda, but, like, what is up with the pose that Carrie D. English is standing in when she's in the bedroom, when she's in Nick's bedroom?
I was going to bring up the fact that she was in lingerie also, but I didn't want to bring up the coda.
Let's do it, because we're all organically there, so let's do it.
Like, yeah, it's just, of course they had to find a moment where she had to be in lingerie.
She was going out, though, and whatnot. I can buy this.
I know, but it's like, they just kind of slipped that in there. It just kind of rolled my eyes, you know.
There is a lot that we can say about, like, the male gaze. Of course, we have to see her in her underwear, yada, yada, yada. But for the plot, I feel like it did make sense a little bit.
But, like, of course, Brooke had to walk in when she's in, like, this outfit.
Yeah. But what is the pose that she's standing in? She has, like, one foot on the bed, and she's just standing.
I didn't know if she was putting, like, a stocking on, or... Yeah, it was weird because she like had her one foot
bent over. She wasn't bent over, lifted up a stocking. Now she was literally just had one foot on the bed, and she was just like standing there with like, you know, her stomach may have been like tucked in just to make herself like look sexy or whatnot. And it's just, it was weird to me.
Yeah, it was very strange. I don't understand it either.
So, yeah, the pose like really threw me off. Other than it just, for that, I could say, yeah, to put her on display by being like, hey, look at her in her lingerie. Like, they didn't have to do it like that, you know?
I don't know, Jeremy.
But anywho.
It's a strange storyline.
But go carry D English for, you know, make this a much belated congratulations for 2006. Slow clap. Anyway, do you want to move on to talking about Peyton and Derek?
Yeah, this is kind of like a rough storyline. Just there's so much trauma that Peyton has to like unpack. And instead of seeing her re-traumatize herself, going into the school, going into the gym, like all these scenarios you're presented with, I would have much rather, I'm a broken record, and I know you will completely agree with me, but I would have much rather seen her work this out in a therapy session.
Listeners can't see me, but I was literally mouthing Caitlin that entire session.
Yep. It's just like, I understand she has trauma. Why do we have to see it like, it's like being rehashed over and over again. It's like, let her actually start to resolve and talk about her problems. She's getting yelled at by her brother. I mean, Lucas is there supporting her, and he's a comfort. I get that. Derek's really harsh. He does tone it down and apologize later after he was really being hard on her for like just not getting up and going to school. And this would also be another opportunity to recast her dad, because clearly that actor wasn't available, and give us a third Larry. Because she needs a father figure.
She really does, but the show is not interested in pursuing that. Instead, they just want to show Peyton be traumatized and be a victim.
I really, truly wonder if it's because, like, why do we not have a dad? Is it because they were not interested in pursuing that, and they're trying to pursue the Derek family element, and they were too busy doing that? Or was the actor truly not available? I'm going to really wonder that until the end of time, because it just doesn't make sense that she doesn't have a dad in this moment.
I think there's just, like, too much going on with Peyton, and especially, like, with what's to come in the season two. I just feel like they didn't have, like, the real estate for that character or that actor at this point.
It's a shame, because it's really isolating what she's going through. She's literally alone. You know, she doesn't have her best friend anymore. It's really just Lucas who's there for her. How did you feel about the whole Derek story in this episode?
I feel weird. Now I'm just like going down a rabbit hole though. What was the actor's name? Kevin Kilner. I'm like, was he up to anything in 2006? Now I'm curious.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I didn't think to look that up.
Okay. Give me one second. Okay. He did a TV movie. He was in one episode of The New Adventures of Old Christine. He was in one episode of The Closer. Yeah, the actor wasn't too busy, that much I can tell you. Unless, like, I don't, he may be doing something else, like, off screen. But I really think it just had to do with the fact that they just didn't have, like, the real estate for this type of story. And it would have been nice to just see, like, Peyton ask for help, too. And that's kind of touched on a little bit with, like, how Derek essentially forces Peyton to go to school. And Derek is like, hey, you don't have a problem, right? So you can go to school, right? And then Peyton goes to school. She ends up realizing that she's not okay. And she needs to, like, storm off and, like, you know, leave this situation. And then Peyton actually tells Derek, she's like, well, what if I'm not strong enough? And then Derek says, if you feel like you're not strong enough, then fall back on me, because I'll be here, okay? I'll be here as long as you keep trying. And that was really great to see from Derek, but it would be nice to see that from her dad as well, you know?
I know. Like, she needs all the support that she can get right now. And I'm glad that Derek is coming around.
Yeah.
And then he apologized for earlier in the episode, but you know, how much now he's blown his nose.
What?
There's just so many loud noises going on out there. I'm sorry.
I didn't hear that.
Okay,
one.
No, he's blowing his nose really loud. So, okay.
So, we're doing it live, listeners.
Yeah. So, Derek, did you have more to say?
No, I mean, the last thing I want to say about him is that we do see that he has, like, some similarities with Peyton about how he doesn't let people in, because he admits that to Peyton as well. So that was nice to see. It's nice to see that these two, like, have some similarities. They're definitely siblings.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's definitely.
And then he teaches her how to throw a punch with that little million-dollar baby-looking motherfucker.
Yeah, that was good, like, so she can get her aggression out a little bit. But, like, still, therapy. Like, that would be the most healthy yes. way to deal with all this.
Mm-hmm. And I also don't like this fact that, like, Peyton has to always rely on somebody else in her life. Like, the fact that Derek's like, hey, if you're not strong enough, you fall back on me. But I'm like, Peyton really shouldn't have to fall back on, like, a family member. She needs to fall back on a professional sometimes. Like, great that you're there, Derek. 1,000%. That's great. But sometimes it's okay to get professional help as well.
Yes. It's like you need all of those things. You need the family support. You need professional help. And then you might also need, like, a healthy physical outlet, like the punching yeah. bag. So all of it is important.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy.
The TLDR is that Peyton deserves better.
She does. She really does.
Just like Deb deserves better.
I know. Are we rolling into that?
Yeah.
What's interesting to me is we see Deb in the doctor's office, and she's talking about the back pain, and then the doctor says, I'm not comfortable prescribing you anything more, and Deb's like, well, you know it isn't back pain. I just basically need the pills. And the doctor does bring up therapy. She's like, I'll make the appointment for you. You really need to, like, I don't know if she was really talking about physical therapy, or I think it was actually, like, emotional therapy, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking, like, a problem with, like, drugs, honestly.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah, okay.
Like, rehab, that, I think she was thinking.
That's what I was thinking, too, the way she was saying it. Like, I'll make the appointment for you so that you can take care of this. And I find that interesting that they bring it up in that scenario, but it's never brought up with Peyton's trauma, you know?
Yeah. And Deb still rejects it because during that time when the doctor goes away to make the appointment, that's when Deb steals the doctor's prescription book.
Yes.
And prescribes some pills for herself.
And goes to the pharmacy, and then the pharmacist questions it, as he should. And then we see a scene where Deb is getting arrested, and we see it on the news because she's technically the governor's wife.
The governor? Oh, God.
I'm not sorry, the governor. The mayor. The governor. The mayor's wife.
Don't want to see that. Next up, Dan will be president. Oh, no.
Oh, my God. And on, like, the TV, it says, like, if she's found guilty, she can be in prison for up to 10 years. Did you hear that?
Yeah, I did hear that, yes.
I'm like, well, this is never addressed again, I don't think.
Well, Dan does, like, make it go away.
Yeah.
Quote, unquote.
Yeah, he makes it go away, but.
But still, like, the fact that, like, this never, like, comes back to haunt her. Because, you know, like, eagle-eyed viewers, I feel like if this were to happen today, like, I feel like us as, like, no, not if it happened today, but, like, I feel like with critical audiences, wouldn't we be looking back at Deb and be like, hey, back in 2006, like, wasn't she got put away and she could have been at risk for going to jail for 10 years? Welcome to nothing ever came of that. Huh?
Yeah, it's like a plot hole. I get that Dan made it disappear, but yeah, you really would think that it would somehow come back to her.
Like, people would wonder. People would be asking questions. Like, what happened here? How did they just make it go away?
You really wonder how much power a mayor has to make something like that go away, but...
Politicians can do things like this, though.
I will say... that the scene where Dan's in the cafe for some reason and Karen's there in the background and they're looking at the screen and they see Deb getting arrested and Dan just casually says, huh, guess Deb won't be making the game tonight. It was just such a laugh out loud moment to me.
That was really funny.
A good Dan line.
It's a good, like, sassy little diss. Like, oh, okay. Yep. I do. That was a funny line. I did not like when he goes to pick up Deb in jail and she's with a bunch of women. And the Dan says, which one of you whores is my ex-wife? Oh, yeah, that's right. The old one at the end. Come on.
I know. Oh, yikes.
But Dan ends up saying that, okay, Deb, like, I'll get you off the hook for this, but you're going to give Trick back to Karen. And then Deb says, okay, I'll do this, but I'm not going to rehab. And then Dan says, oh, OD for all I care, but you're giving Trick back to Karen.
Yeah, that was really harsh.
And it kind of just shows, like, he doesn't give a shit about her. And it kind of, like, he's doing all this stuff for Karen, which is like, okay, that's great. But... he's only being a nice person to Karen. I would like to see him be a nice person to everybody, which is why I feel like this, like, redemption arc, quote unquote, is kind of falling flat in some places for me.
Yeah, it definitely is.
Like, I like that this is a vehicle to get Trick back to Karen. It's really great, but, and I don't know how else I would have liked to have seen it, but it would have been nice to see it done a little bit differently. And even while that line is funny in the cafe.
Yeah, the cafe line is funny.
It would still be nice to see him, like, you know, just care in general.
I mean, the fact that you can't, like, he has no feelings for someone who is still technically his wife and the mother of his child. It's just, like, total disregard for her as a human, and it's just not an attractive quality.
Nope.
It's like, clearly she needs money. Help. I mean, wouldn't this benefit your son to have, you know, a mother who's healthy? At least, like, minimum.
Right.
So it's really, really a shame what's going on with Deb. I don't like it.
Very, very much lacks nuance, as I've said several times before.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of icky story. Like, I'm looking at the list right now, and it's just, like, icky storyline after icky storyline.
You mean this next one that we're getting into with Mr. Chavez?
Yeah.
So I wanna note that, like, Nick walks in and he refers to Brooke as his most promising, sexy, and irresistible student. And I'm like, don't say that she's your student.
The thing is, like, he walks in so casual and doesn't even pretend that he doesn't know her. Like, he's not trying to hide it in any way. Yeah. And it's so blatant and it's just, it's even grosser to me.
And Brooke is actually a little bit more ashamed. She's worried about getting caught.
Because then Matt's there.
Because as you
there.
See, like, yeah. Because, like, she hides him behind, like, a curtain, and Nick doesn't even seem to give a shit that he could get caught.
I know.
I feel like he's probably one of those people who likes the thrill. Like, he's, like, he thinks it's hot to get caught or something like that.
Yeah, he's messed up. I don't know. It was so icky to me. I was just, like, watching the scene, because... I knew that Sophia was probably, like, cringing during that whole storyline, based on what we've heard about it from her. And it's just really irresponsible all around.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention illegal.
Yeah. To move us forward, though, we find out that Rachel she's on the cover of Maxim the first time. A hometown hottie is on the cover of Maxim. There's a lot of really bad fat jokes here, where, like, Rachel says, if I'm so fat, why am I on the cover of Maxim?
Like, oh, I didn't hear that. I totally missed that.
Yeah, like,
she's saying that too.
So Rachel comes up to Brooke, and Brooke says, Brooke's like, oh, what are you doing here? The plus size show is next door. And then Rachel says, well, if I'm so fat, why am I on the cover of Maxim?
I think I totally, like, just blocked that out.
You should have, because it's awful. But during this moment, like, we see, like, Rachel and Brooke, like, jumping up and down for joy, and this is a very cute gif that I use from time to time.
Yeah, that is cute. That is cute. Yeah.
Where the two of them are like, ah! Like, I don't know
how to, yeah, I love that.
How else to describe it. So, I do enjoy that. Also, like, while we're on the scene, like, what is up with this era of, like, of people wearing plain, like, A-line tank tops with, like, lingerie over them? I feel like that was really popular for this era.
Yeah.
Like, what Brooke's wearing.
The layering? Yeah, it's kind of weird. It is weird layering. Layering in general was a big thing during this era.
I do remember. I had a few of those shirts. Like, I would layer Lucas wear some tops. Of those shirts, the twofers.
What would you do?
You see, there's like twofer shirts. It was like a graphic tee with like a long sleeve shirt underneath.
Yes, exactly.
And it was like attached. Like, I had so many of those during this era.
I would layer like that too. I think I had shirts that came like that. And then I know I would, and other girls would layer the just like tank tops, like two different colors, like layer them on top of each other. I don't really understand, but meh.
It's such a product of that time.
It truly, truly is. That's one of its signature fashion, like, things.
I don't know if I ever remember seeing people wear lingerie over a regular tank top, though.
I don't know. Maybe because we were in high school. That really wasn't... I wonder if adults
couldn't do that
during that time. I don't know. Like, because these characters, their fashion, or at least Brooke's fashion, I think Brooke out of everyone... is a little bit more elevated than like what a high schooler would be wearing.
True, <know? laughs> yeah.
Like, I feel like Peyton is pretty accurate, like jeans and a tee, and then Haley's usually pretty normal, quote unquote.
Yeah, Lucas's style too.
Yeah, Lucas
I feel like I dress most like Lucas during this era,
yeah,
I
yeah.
would say.
That's right, Lucas, definitely.
He has a lot of twofer shirts. I feel like a lot of them are coming up later in the
yeah,
season.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
For all I know, there may be shirts that he owns. There might be shirts on the show where I'm like, oh, I had that exact shirt.
That's funny.
But anyway, didn't mean to get off on a fashion little tangent, though.
It's fun to do that from time to time, though. It's such like a, like, just the time period. It's cool to talk about it because we were old enough to, like, now really remember a lot of these things, you know? Like,
yes.
We were an impressionable age,
mm-hmm.
and the fashion stuff, yeah.
Back when we had, like, all the time in the world to, like, put outfits together and whatnot. Yeah. I saw this meme very recently where it was like, how come in high school I put on a full face of makeup before school every single day, and where did my will for to do that go away? When did that go away?
I would either straighten my hair or scrunch it with like mousse overnight so got like curling, and then I would wear makeup, like mascara and eyeshadow, and now like I go to work and just out in the world, and you know, maybe with just some concealer. Like, not much else than that.
Oh yeah. There was an era when I was like, when I had a little bit longer hair, senior year of high school, and I did straighten it. But yeah, like I would wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So I was just like, I could never do that now. But it was just like never even a thought. Like, yeah, wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning. That's normal. Yeah. Like, let me straighten my hair.
Our bus would come at 6:45. Or 6:50 or something like that.
I know. Yeah.
It's more rough. Like, it's rougher now as an adult to get up earlier than it was when I was a teenager. Because, like, mm-hmm. I remember it was not pleasant, you know, getting up at that hour to catch a bus at 6:50 or whatever it was. It wasn't pleasant. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember it being as painful as it is to, like, get up early. Like, when you have to get up really early.
Yeah. Like, you have to catch a flight. That's the only time that I feel like we wake up early nowadays is, like, when we have to catch a flight.
Yeah.
Or something like that, because I would not know it. Another big thing, I used to wear a shit ton of cologne during this era, too.
Did you?
I did, yeah. It smelled awful.
Why'd you wear it if it smelled awful?
I mean, just because, like, I put so much on myself. I'm glad you don't remember this, because I remember this about
myself. You know, when
myself.
You brought it up, I don't remember in a negative way, but I kind of remember, I guess, you having a scent.
I don't smell like anything now.
Yeah, I don't remember being with you anytime recently where I smell a fragrance.
Yeah, I ended up realizing, like, later on in life that, like, I just, like, cologne or perfume or anything, like, doesn't smell good on me. I don't think I have, like, the body for it.
Huh.
Because I feel like even if I just do, like, one little spritz, I just smell bad. And I don't know what it is. I have a whole bottle of Britney Spears' Fantasy fragrance. Every now and then I'll fuck with it and be like, okay, let me put this on. But each time I regret it.
Huh. Well, that sucks.
Yeah. I'll wear Britney Spears' Fantasy next time we hang out.
Yeah, you should. I'll tell you
if you
smell okay.
Post about it in the Discord to our patrons. Like Jeremy smells good. That's all you're going to put. Jeremy smells good or Jeremy smells bad. No contacts. The listeners will know what you're talking about.
Oh, that's funny. We really went off tangent.
Anyway, that was fun, though. Anyway, I brought up the whole thing about the hometown hottie thing because in the classroom, Rachel is like, all the boys are like fawning over her, being like, oh my God, Rachel, you look so hot. And then Nick comes in and takes the magazines away. And then that's when Rachel's like, what's wrong, Mr. Chavez? I thought she liked high school girls. And then Nick asks to see Rachel after class. He brings her in. And we don't know what happens during this conversation, but we end up seeing that Rachel goes to Brooke and says, like, hey, listen, Nick hit on me. He's a bad guy. And then Rachel ends up reporting Mr. Chavez to Principal Turner. And basically Nick is using this entire time to, like, turn Brooke against Rachel and say that Rachel's lying.
I know. And Brooke is even called into the principal's office. And she denies that there's a relationship going on with the teacher, Nick. And it's interesting to see a storyline where Rachel is doing the right thing here.
Yeah.
You know, the honorable thing to, like, report this, you know, tell Brooke this is wrong. Those are all good things, even though she is the one who kind of got Brooke into the situation, but didn't know that Nick was a teacher.
Right.
And then Brooke is the one who's, like, actively denying it. It's kind of like a role reversal a little bit.
But the thing I am not liking about this, though, is that Nick is being portrayed as, because, spoiler alert, but we gotta, like, talk about the coda real quickly just to give context.
I'm telling you, it's so hard to avoid the coda.
Sometimes it's okay in these situations, but, like, we had to find it out that, like, Mr. Chavez is not a good guy, and that he was, like, essentially cheating on Brooke here. But I feel like that's the only thing the storyline is trying to convey. It's trying to convey the facts like, oh, Nick is a cheater, but we're not talking about the fact that he is a predator who is preyed on not one, but two high school girls here. And granted, like, I don't think Brooke or Rachel would have, like, the emotional intelligence at this point as teenagers to really unpack that for sure, but I feel like in the broader messaging of the storyline, they're not really talking about the fact that he is preying on young girls here.
I think that's a really good point because, like, we even have the principal in the storyline, and that could have very well led to a larger storyline where they're addressing this behavior and, like, why this is wrong and getting the students into, like, Brooke and Rachel, like, with a school counselor, you know, like, there were opportunities where, like, this could have gone in a different direction, but no, the focus is on that he cheated, and that's what makes him a bad person, and Brooke doesn't want anything to do with a cheater, but there's no, like, realization that being with a teacher isn't healthy, like, it's illegal, but also it's just not a healthy situation for her to be in. I don't feel like there's any recognition of that. Yeah, so the messaging of the show is totally off.
And Turner is, like, a nice guy. Like, he doesn't blame Brooke or anything like that. He just asks, like, is this the truth? If we do find out this is true, he will be suspended. And I feel like he's extended that to Brooke to say, like, hey, like, he will be dealt with. But I feel like it needs to go beyond this. Like, you know, like you said, having her speak to a counselor, having Rachel speak to a counselor. Like, you know, this is much bigger than him being a cheater. He's a bad guy for many reasons, and it's not just because he's a cheater here.
I know, and it's like being a cheater is, it's not the worst thing of all the things that he's done, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm. And also the whole thing about how he used, like, Rachel's promiscuity against her. And I feel like this is, like, this is a narrative that's sometimes used against, like, women specifically who are very sexual and who are, like, pretty promiscuous. I feel like they're often the target of predators in this way. Because here's what happened to Nick. Like, Nick, you know, tried... Nick actually did hit on Rachel, it seemed like. And he's trying to say, like, hey, like, you know, the teachers all talk about her. And he's using that against her. And it's just, it's so gross. It tracks for, like, what a guy like this would do. So it makes sense for the narrative. But I just really, I hate this guy. I really do.
I'm glad this is done and over with.
Yeah, we never see Mr. Chavez again after this. Dear listeners.
That's a wrap.
The character just wasn't interested either. Like, I don't really think they knew what they were doing when they introduced this character.
The only thing that they were trying to do is to make this, like, this kind of sexy, quote-unquote, storyline, I think. Like, that's really what it was intended to be, I guess, which is really gross.
Mm-hmm.
On a lot of levels.
And it's one of those things where you realize that it's gross the older you get. Like, I don't know if this is okay to talk about, but...
Oh, boy.
But, you know what I'm about to say, it's juicy. Like, when I say, like, I don't know if this is okay to talk about. But, Caitlin, I don't know if you remember, there was a teacher at our high school who got caught for, you know, he was having relationships with students, right?
Yeah.
You know who I'm talking about? Okay. I remember, like, you know, like, back when we were younger and we were students ourselves, and you can speak for yourself, but I remember thinking, like, oh, that's hot, because I was a teen myself, like, hearing about this. And then, all these years later, like, 10 years after we graduate, this guy ends up getting caught. And now I'm like, look at him, like, oh, yeah, good. He should have gotten caught. I remember hearing those rumors. But it's just, I guess it just shows, like, how your thought process changes as you get older and how you see things.
At the time when we were in high school, it was always kind of like the joke that he would flirt with the girls.
Mm-hmm.
And you recognized it, like, as a kid. Like, we heard about it. We heard various rumors and things. But you didn't fully question it. And right. Then, yeah, in hindsight, something was off there.
Yeah, and then eventually, like, you know, we got into an age where people started leaking text messages and everything that he used to send to young girls, and he essentially, like, his career's over now.
There was an unhinged Facebook group at one point.
I do remember that, yes.
And then I think it went private, but it was a public thing, or I believe, for... There was, like, a weekend there where a lot happened.
Yeah, a few teachers, I believe, got caught. So, like, teachers that, like, weren't even, there was, like, no evidence that we even had about these teachers, you know? And, yeah, it just goes to show you. And I feel like teens nowadays, too, because I remember, like, there were some, like, in that unhinged Facebook group you're talking about, there were current teens who were in there.
Yeah.
And they were talking about their experiences, like, yo... He was a predator. And I feel like they have a little bit more emotional intelligence than we did when we were teens, for sure.
Yeah, and I think the relationships he had were that he eventually got caught with because they were reported. They were more recent. They weren't back when we were. I mean, who knows if, like, people from a while ago added on to, like, the stories and whatnot. Who's to know? But I think the ones that were just a few years out were what eventually got him arrested.
Yeah, I think the cases where he actually got caught for were from 2017. But as Caitlin and I said, like, this was dating back to when we were in high school, which were the class of 2009.
That's a long time. Like, and then even think, like, the years before us.
Yeah, who knows? Like,
the teacher
what could have
was
happened.
There a while, I believe.
It's just It's really, really sick. And there are Mr. Chavez's out there, and they need to be held accountable.
Definitely. It's a very disturbing thought. Like, kids should be safe at school. That should not even be a thought.
Mm-hmm. Ugh. I don't know how to transition to this next topic. But...
yeah, what icky storyline do we have next?
Like, we can talk about a sexual predator moving on to a predator who's trying to steal money from a teen. Cool.
This is so wild, and I feel like we've said this before, but, like, who is betting on high school sports? Who is doing that? Like, Dante's is talking like there are all these bets around town. Like, it's going to be this big thing if Nathan keeps the scoring under 10 points or whatever it was. I just don't understand it. It just doesn't seem conceivable. I would love to hear if anyone has heard of anything like this, like betting on high school sports. Is that even a legal thing to do?
Have you ever been involved in a point-shaving scandal? We want to hear from you.
Well, that, I'm assuming, like, I don't know. That maybe has not happened in high school, but maybe it has. Who knows? But I would just be curious about betting in general on high school sports. Is that a practice anywhere?
And we learned that Nathan originally owed Dante $10,000, but because he didn't pay Dante back on time, that got bumped up to $15,000. And so Nathan gets desperate. Dante says that he'll erase the debt if the Ravens win by less than 9 points. Because the original bet was that, or what everybody's betting on, was the fact that Ravens were going to beat the other team by more than 10 points.
Yeah. And, so. I mean, Nathan feels like he doesn't have a choice because, like, there's no one who's going to help him. He even sneaks into his mom's safe. And all of that money's gone. I'm guessing it was used on drugs at this point. And he doesn't feel like he has a choice. Like, I guess the amount's just going to continue to keep going up. So he does that. And then the worst part of it all is that he gets Lucas involved.
I just got to say, if this were to happen today, Nathan would start a GoFundMe and he would be good.
Yeah.
But instead, we got to do this. And, you know, in the way the storyline's being portrayed at this current moment, because we don't know what's going to happen after this, it's pretty low. It's a low stakes bet because Nathan is, the Ravens are still going to win. They just have to win by fewer points than the original plan was. So Nathan tells Lucas about it. Lucas has to throw these free throws he has to throw, and he ends up missing on purpose just because Nathan really needs that money. So the circumstances behind this is kind of dark, but yay, the Ravens are at this, they're gonna go to state championship.
Yeah, that's exciting. But it sucks in the moment for Nathan and Lucas, that's for sure.
The circumstances are kind of bad here.
Yep.
On lighter notes, though, we get to see Haley babysit, and one of the kids, the daughter, is Natalie Allen Linz, Barbara Allen Woods' daughter.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yes, it is.
That's funny.
So she is the one who made the dirt and water for Haley.
Yes, she is the one. That was funny because Haley was like all excited. She's like, oh, you made that for me? And then spits it back
and
out.
And she just drinks it without questioning it, without being critical of it. She just like puts it in her mouth. I'm like, yo, like think about that for a second.
Oh my God.
But Haley probably has less experience with kids than we realize. So the reason why she's babysitting is because, like, you know, she thought she could get some experience taking care of children, plus get a little bit of extra cash. And this is right after, like, she tells Nathan that she's going to go to Duke with him. We should bring that up real quickly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she got her acceptance letter to Duke. So the two of them are going to go together. So, yay.
Yeah, that's exciting and super convenient.
Yeah, just convenient for the storyline. But yeah, so as Nathan's walking out, Haley's like, hey, why don't you stop by and say hello to the kids? And Nathan's like, oh, I don't really like kids. And Haley's like, huh? And then Nathan's like, I like our kid. Which, I feel that. Like, I don't have children of my own, but I have nieces and nephews, and I can say that, like, I'm not really a fan of children, but I do like the children that I am directly
related to.
Not even related to, but like friends' kids, for example. Like, you know, I'm like great with kids. Kids like eat me up, but I'm like little children, just like random children walking nearby. I'm like, no, I am terrified of them. It's not even so much like I don't like them. I am scared of them. I am terrified of little children.
Well, some of them can be little terrors.
Yes, that's for sure. For sure.
I think this storyline is pretty comical because, like, you get to see Haley just totally doesn't know what to do. She's sitting behind a table as they throw stuff at her. There's, like, a ninja with, one of the kids is, like, a ninja with a sword, but I think it's, like, a plunger or something. And there's dirt water. Then
yeah,
she has to take the, mom isn't coming, doesn't come back when she says she will. And Haley takes the kids to the game. And she's, like, frazzled, and Karen's like, it'll be okay, because that's just Karen's response to everything now.
Like, what am I going to do? Which, I feel like this is a realistic response, though. Like, hey, kids are chaotic, you know? Like, you just got a hand in there.
Yeah. But I do think it was sweet. I don't even know if this is the coda. I think it was right before the coda. At the end of the game, Haley's looking for the kids.
This is rolling right into the coda.
It's rolling
actually,
into
so we can
it,
talk about it,
but it's not the coda.
No, it is the coda.
Oh, the song's playing?
Uh-huh.
Okay. That it is. Well, so I'm going to run with it.
Yes,
we are in the coda where the Band of Horses is playing the funeral. And we see Haley looking around the gym. She has no idea where the two kids are. She's asking people where they are. And then she looks one way and she sees Nathan playing basketball with the kids, and one of them's up on his shoulders, the other one's throwing the ball, and it was like a cute moment for them.
Yeah,
as like future parents,
the one kid is like, when I grow up I want to be just like you.
It was really sweet. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I liked it. And it just goes to show, like, even though Nathan quote unquote doesn't like kids, he's still good with kids.
Yep.
So it just goes to show, like, he was willing to, like, take responsibility. But I just want to know, like, does Nathan know who these kids are? Does he know that Haley is babysitting these exact kids? Or is he just like, oh, here's some children coming up. Like, let's play with them.
I know, because he never really met them, but I guess maybe he saw Haley with them during the game.
That's true. Yeah, I just thought about that. Also, like, earlier, I just gotta say, like, I love how Haley is, like, overcompensated for the parent. She's talking to the mom, and she says, like, I read all the childcare books, I'm CPR certified, and I have organic snacks and lots of fun games. And the mom is just like, do you have the numbers for local authorities? Haley's like, yeah, of course. And she's like, great. And just leaves.
I know.
Which I feel like that's a reality for, like, parents. Like, you know, you can be so, so prepared, but you really don't know, like, what's going to happen. So, like, whatever. Yeah. You can be super duper prepared, have all this stuff, but it really doesn't matter.
Yep.
Because you got to go with the flow.
And it's definitely, things are unexpected with kids. So. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so we go from that gym place. That gym place.
We're leaving that in there.
Sure. We go from the gym, and then we go to Nick's place. And then this is where we see Brooke is walking in on Nick cheating. She slaps him, takes her stuff, and then she slaps him again. This is where we see Carrie D. English standing in a really, really weird pose. But also, like, Nick was just going to leave the woman in his apartment because, if you recall, he was he was just telling Brooke, like, I was just about to get something to eat. Do you want to go? And he was just going to leave her in there?
I think he was so desperate to, like, conceal the Tia that he was just going to leave. Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But Nick is an asshole for many reasons.
Then we are outside of the gym. Lucas sits and contemplates. He's thinking about the game and everything that just transpired, I'm assuming. And his voiceover begins. We'll read the voiceover at the very end.
Cool. And then we are in Rachel and Brooke's room. Did you see that Brooke answered and says, hi, friends.
Oh, I didn't pick up on that. Yeah.
She does. And like, is this the first time we ever hear Brooke say, hi, friends?
Maybe. Jeremy and I always say hi, friend. Well, Jeremy typically says it.
Whenever we get on a recorded session, I'm like, hi, friends! And yeah, so it's cute, but Brooke is, these circumstances aren't really cute though, but Brooke is like really upset. She says, hi, friend. And then she says that Rachel was right about everything. Rachel apologizes. She's like, I'm sorry, Brooke. I wish I wasn't. And then Brooke cries in Rachel's arms, and it's a really cute friendship moment.
Then we're waiting outside some kind of club or fancy place. Not really sure where.
No idea.
But Mouth, look, he's standing there and he looks like he's waiting for someone. And then you see Gigi come up, which is cute. He says, I'm glad I picked red. You look beautiful.
Yeah, because earlier in the episode, Gigi asked him, like, what color do you like, red or blue? And that's what, yep, and Gigi wore it.
Yeah, so that was a nice moment where he made that choice between the models and Gigi and ultimately chose Gigi.
Mm-hmm. And then we are in Naily's apartment. This is when Haley is saying goodbye to the kids. And the young girl hugs Haley. And then it's like, oh, this is such a sweet moment. Only for it to reveal that young Natalie Allen Lynn's put a kick me sign on Haley's back. And then Nathan's like, still think you like kids? And then Haley looks at the mess in the apartment. And it's just like, I like our kid.
Full circle, right?
Also, I want to know how much did Haley get paid for this, because I noticed there was she had three bills in her hands that the mom handed to her. There was a 20 and there was a 1. I don't know what that third bill is, but I'm hoping it was another 20. Maybe it was like another 50, because Haley was babysitting those kids for a lot of hours.
Yeah, a 20, even if it was another 20. $41 is really random and not enough.
Yeah. I was like, she should at least be getting like $20 an hour or something like that. Plus the fact that she had to like take the kids to the game and everything.
Yeah, it's a lot. And then next we are at Peyton's bedroom and you see her punching the punching bag that Derek gave her. And then the camera zooms into the big dog that she painted on behind her or her bedroom wall. And it says Derek on the little... What do you call that?
The collar.
The collar, yeah.
What are words tonight? This is a loopy recording for some reason.
It's definitely a loopy recording.
But hopefully it gives everybody something interesting to listen to. And then finally, we're at the River Court, and Nathan thanks Lucas for the point shaven, essentially, and assures Lucas it was a one-time thing. And this is when Lucas responds, Nathan, you know I'll always be there for you, but never again. And then we see Dante's car drive by, and Lucas is watching. Fade to black.
Oh, boy. So Lucas's voiceover in full. I'm going to read the whole thing. Regret comes in all shapes and sizes. Some are small, like when we do a bad thing for a good reason. Some are bigger, like when you let down a friend. Some of us escape the pain of regret by making the right choice. Some of us have little time for regret because we're looking forward to the future. Sometimes we have to fight to come to terms with the past, and sometimes we bury our regret by promising to change our own ways. But our biggest regrets are not for the things we did, but for the things we didn't do. Things we didn't say that could have saved someone that we care about, especially when we can see the dark storm that's headed their way.
So, what was your favorite quote of the episode?
So, mine is actually the funny Dan line earlier when he's like, guess Deb won't be making the game tonight. Just because the delivery of it was so good. And I honestly burst out laughing when it happened. So, it was genuinely funny to me. What about you?
Cute. My favorite is one that I already said before, too, is what Derek says to Peyton. He says, if you feel like you're not strong enough, then fall back on me, because I'll be here, okay? I'll be here as long as you keep trying. I just feel like that's, like, a really nice, like, inspirational message on how you can be there for somebody. Like, you know, like, hey, you can fall back on me if you're not strong enough.
Yeah.
And it's just nice.
That was a nice moment for them, yeah.
But there's another funny honorable mention I have when Rachel and Brooke are standing next to each other wearing their cheerleading uniforms. And Rachel says, oh, well, nice outfit, Brooke. I am so jealous of it. Oh, wait, look, I'm wearing the same thing. I am so freaking full of jealousy.
That was funny.
And I like to say a variation of this line whenever I see somebody else wearing the same shirt as me. Or especially, like, if you go to work and, like, you know, somebody's wearing the same uniform as you, and you just like, oh, my God, that's a nice shirt. I wish I had one.
Oh, my God. That's so funny. I didn't even remember that line.
It's cute. It's, like, it's such a past and fleeting moment, but it's funny.
So, I give this episode a 3 out of 5.
You didn't share your musical moments. What the hell?
This is a loopy episode.
Why would you skip to that? What is your favorite musical moment, Caitlin? Mine is the coda, I can tell you that right now.
I'm so sorry. I don't know why. I just skipped right on over it. So my favorite musical moment.
This episode ends? Go ahead.
My
go
favorite
ahead.
Musical moment is the coda. The funeral cool, cool, by cool. Band of Horses, because I love that song. I've loved that song since like it aired, I feel like. It's a good one. Just lots of emotion.
Nice. Now you can say you're right in.
So I give this episode 3 out of 5 babysitting nightmares.
Cute.
It was just another episode that was just okay to me. A lot, like we said, a lot of gross storylines. Nothing really too happy.
Yeah.
Honestly, there weren't too many highlights at all. Maybe the Peyton and Derek stuff, but I don't know. It's just an okay episode. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. I also give this 3 out of 5 high friends. Not like high, like high on drugs, but hello, high friends.
Hi, friend.
But yeah, this episode just wasn't super impressive. I feel like there were a lot of like missteps, particularly with the Brooke and Rachel and Nick storyline. There were some weird things going on with just like how this episode treats women. So, but overall, but there were some good parts, some highlights, and I feel like we've went over a few of them.
I feel like when we get into the season a little bit more deeply, there's going to be better episodes. There's one that's coming up soon, so.
Oh yeah, there is.
I'm excited for that.
There's a few. So, fear not, listeners. We're going to be talking more about, like, you know, like, oh, we like this episode rather than this is okay.
I mean, we still had a lot to talk about for an okay episode. That's how we do
mostly
things
because
here.
Because we are loopy right now.
Yep, we are definitely loopy.
We are recording this, like, you know, at the end of Thanksgiving weekend, so I don't know if that has something to do with it.
Maybe.
But.
Oh my gosh.
Maybe we just have, like, food hangovers or something. I don't know.
Maybe.
Anyway.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Always and Forever. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook at AlwaysOTHPod. You can also email us at alwaysothpod@gmail.com. That's always OTHPOD.
Always and Forever is also on Patreon, and you can support us over on patreon.com/alwaysothpod to gain access to our private Discord server, where you can chat with us and other listeners, bonus episodes, including our spoiler-full mini-episodes, our Drama Queens reaction podcast, Royal Review, and our movie podcast, Baker Soundstage. You will also gain access to early episode releases. And you also get to support us, and we would really, really appreciate the support, because this podcast is essentially a full-time job, and I feel like, Caitlin, between the two of us, we probably get paid maybe like 10 cents an hour working on this podcast at the moment. So it would be very helpful to just support any amount you can to help us keep this podcast going, because we really enjoy doing it and we would like to continue it.
And we have a lot of fun things that the more patrons we get, more fun things that we can set out into the world.
Yeah, we can have even more Patreon exclusive mini episodes if we get more funds. So keep that in mind. And our community is really great. It's small but thriving over in Discord. But we all do have a lot of fun with each other in there.
Yeah, it's a good time. I like the Discord a lot. But if you can't support us on Patreon, you can also leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. That's the easiest way to support us and to help One Tree Hill fans new and old find us. And if you leave us a 5-star review, we may read it on the show.
We will read it on the show if it's a 5-star review, for the record.
Yes.
Otherwise, we will ignore it. All it has to do, you just have to say something like, I like it. It's really good. We'll read it. That's all we need.
I'm Caitlin Illinich. You can follow me on Twitter at Miss I Reads.
And I'm Jeremy Rodriguez. What were you looking at?
I was looking at our reviews. We haven't got one in a while.
I was like, what is this pause here that's happening? Anyway. I'm Jeremy Rodriguez, and you can follow me and my even more unhinged thoughts on different places on social media at either Rodriguez Jeremy or Rodriguez Jeremy _.
We'll be seeing ya.
This is an episode.
It sure was.